The Alex Goldstein Property Show. Stray FM.
Welcome again to the Alex Goldstein Property Show, this very special one-year anniversary edition. We strive to solve your property queries and to put you in the fast lane when it comes to the UK property market. Amazing tips plus industry expert insight, that is what we're all about. Now, if you need that property hit, connect with the Alex Goldstein social media accounts to get the very best property advice whenever you need it. Now, in this month's show, we're getting the inside track from Andrew Pariscandolo from Powell Edison Solicitors on wills, trusts and probate, and we're demystifying all of that. We also get to grips with the insurance industry, getting experienced insight from Ian Darnbrook from A1 Insurance. Loads to fit in, so we're straight on with it.
Property News with Alex Goldstein. Stray
FM. Is there another possible scandal brewing in the property world? We are still feeling the effects of the banking and mortgage crisis from 2008, when banks were accused of mis-selling mortgages to people who couldn't afford them. And what do you know, the bottom fell out of the property market. As a result, the pendulum has actually swung the other way now, with banks being ultra-cautious about mortgage lending, making you jump through hoops just to prove that you can actually afford the mortgage you're applying for. Now, as it happens, another scandal is now brewing in the property sector. Some big developers like Taylor Wimpey, Redrow and Bellway are all being accused of mis-selling new-build homes. Buyers have bought these homes as leaseholds with the promise of being able to buy the freehold after 2 years. Usually at the end of a lease, ownership of the property reverts back to the freeholder. However, most people apply to extend the lease many years before it runs out. Until recently, most houses were sold as freehold properties. However, some of these developers have started selling the new build properties as leasehold, then selling the freehold on to investors. Buyers are complaining that they were misled about the opportunity to buy the freehold after 2 years, as unbeknown to them, the freeholds were sold on to private investors before the 2 years were up. The homeowners claim that the investors who now own their freeholds are only interested in making profits, as they've now been subjected to ground rent hikes, additional charges, clauses and restrictions. And as they don't own the freehold, their homes are then much more difficult to sell on and they feel trapped by the situation. Now, let's be absolutely clear. On the face of it, the developers haven't actually done anything illegal by selling the freehold on. However, the homeowners claim that their behaviour has been unethical, especially, and here is the key, as many of the buyers used conveyancing solicitors recommended by the developers, who they say failed to draw their attention to the potential for the freehold to be sold on early. This story is bound to get bigger, so watch this space. But the lesson here is, if you're thinking of buying any property, is to make sure you find a very good independent conveyancing solicitor who will highlight all the pros and cons so that you can make an informed decision and not fall prey to clauses that might come back to bite you later. It's great to have Andrew Pariscandolo from Powell Edison Solicitors in Harrogate in the studio with me. Andrew, thanks so much for coming in. Today, we're just sort of talking through wills, trusts and probate. And it's, I think, an often misunderstood area of the law. And again, just to guide people through, the big hot topic at the moment, I see it, is why should sort of people make a will? It's sort of very much out there, it's being talked about, but I don't think really people have got a grasp as to why and what it entails.
Well, first of all, thank you, Alex, for inviting me to your show. Very kind of you. Yes, I think it is a very hot topic. The statistics say that around 50% of the population don't have a will. There still is a almost like a myth that people think that only wills are supposed to be dealt with by the rich. Yeah. Certainly not. We do regularly advise clients to make a will. They don't have to cost lots of money. They can cost a few hundred pounds, obviously depending on the type of will. But essentially, a will what it does is it details what happens with your estate after you die. So things like your money, your personal possessions, properties, what happens to them after you die. And essentially, if you don't leave a will, it's the law and the laws of intestacy that decide how an estate is dealt with, who deals with it, and how it's distributed.
So effectively, your estate could effectively just gets passed to the government, or how to work if you don't have a will in place?
Yeah, I mean, essentially, it's not as drastic as that. A lot of people think it is, but under the rules of intestacy, it goes down the bloodline. So
okay.
It would be things like people like siblings, sons, daughters, partners, etc. Mainly wives, not partners. But the will allows you to decide how your estate is distributed. It's not the laws of intestacy. So, yep. As I say, because they are literally a few hundred pounds to put together, it's really, really important for people to make wills and have them regularly updated. We generally say around 5 to 6 years to review your wills.
No, I agree. And the other sort of, I suppose, major buzzword out there is an LPA, or a lasting power of attorney. And again, it's a phrase commonly sort of thrown around, very much involved in the will sector. Just sort of talk everyone through that, what it means, what it actually entails, and why you should actually look at it fairly strongly nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, in my view, I always look at it like this. A will is how to deal with your estate after you die. And that deals with things like incorporating stepchildren. You may want to exclude family members. You may want to appoint guardians for young children, etc. Deal with remarriage, divorce, as well as estate planning. But lasting powers of attorney are essentially the way of administering your estate whilst you are alive, so that if you are unable to make decisions about your property, your finances, your bills, etc., not just because you've lost capacity, it may be that you've lost mobility, then a lasting power of attorney is a really good way of doing that. A lot of carers essentially have the buzzword of lasting powers of attorney. Yep. Go make one. It's really, really important. Now, the first thing that I say to a client is, you want a lasting power of attorney, why do you need it? So that's really why people come and get advice about lasting powers of attorney.
So if, for example, I sadly get knocked on the head and, God forbid, I'm in a coma or something like that, if I didn't have an LPA sort of paragraph or something set up in my will, how would it then work? How could someone then take charge of my financial affairs? Is there a process that one needs to go through, or how does it then work?
Let's look at it slightly differently. A will deals with your estate after death.
Yeah.
And that only becomes valid when you die. In terms of the lasting power of attorney, that is whilst you're alive. That comes to an end upon your death, and that's where the will takes over.
Got you.
So if, for example, you were, God forbid, taken ill or run over by a car and had mobility problems and maybe capacity problems, if your spouse or a family member didn't have a lasting power of attorney and they needed access to your funds, they would have problems doing that.
Yeah.
It just depends. People have different estates. They have different combinations of how they hold their money. They may be joint accounts. They may be single accounts. And it's just really talking to the client. And not everybody will need a lasting power of attorney.
Yeah, I think this is a fantastic point, Andrew. Although whilst the phrase LPA, lasting power of attorney, gets thrown around sort of fairly freely, actually, it's not necessarily right for all and sundry, and you need to speak and talk it through in detail because it may not be the right option. And how does it work? I mean, you hear again quite a lot in the news about wills being contested and other family members. I know you sort of slightly joked and saying, well, the one member of the family is sort of left out the will, and then it all gets into the news. And these tend to be the obviously very high profile cases. With your experience and your knowledge of the sector, do you find that this is a growing area, and what's the reason for it? Has there been a change in the law, or why is that? Or is it just the media?
Contested probate has increased in the last 24 months by 2,000%.
Gosh.
And I do think that a lot of it is to do with... there is a case that's just been in the media, yep. which is Eilat & Mits, and essentially that was a case whereby a lady was estranged by from her daughter for a period of around 20-odd years. She then made a conscious decision to distribute her estate to charities. The daughter contested that and yep. was awarded an amount of money by the judge. She then was not happy with that, so appealed it. The appeal judge effectively increased the amount of money that she got. And then the charities then appealed to the Supreme Court. And now the Supreme Court has now ruled that the appeal judge wasn't correct and has reduced the amount back to the original amount. So in my view, it's that case... really is a case that sits on its own facts.
Yeah.
It did attract a lot of attention. It did attract a lot of emphasis for contested probates and contested wills. However, that, in my view, is a victory for testamentary freedom.
Yes.
At the end of the day, people should be allowed to leave their estate how they feel fit,
yeah.
as long as they've been properly advised.
We're quite
and that's the case. that is the problem. We need to make sure that your listeners are properly informed, that they need to just sit down with someone. Needn't cost a lots of money to sit down, find out what their objectives are, and then someone will weigh up the pros and cons.
Yeah, I mean, great insight there, Andrew. And obviously, bolted on the back of this is probate, again, term widely thrown around. Just Lucy, just sort of talk everyone through what it is, why it exists, and yeah. how to actually navigate through it all.
I mean, essentially, probate is the administration of an estate after someone passes away. It is the formal application of the grant of probate if you leave a will.
Yeah.
If you don't leave a will, then it's something that's called letters of administration. And essentially, it is a series of documents that allows you to proceed with the estate. So the grant of probate, once obtained, allows bank accounts to be closed and the money to be collected, properties to be sold.
Yep.
And the one thing that I do want the listeners to be aware of is that which has not been publicised very much, is that the probate fees are just about to increase. And I think that it will have an impact on how people deal with their estate. There will be estates whereby people try to reduce the risk of this
yep.
increased tariff by making decisions such as trusts. They may decide to reduce their estate by the use of trusts. It will also put executors in difficult position simply because they will need to fund this new tariff, which yeah. in some cases will be really difficult.
Andrew, I've got to say, some amazing insights and some great sort of tips for everyone. If anyone wanted to get in touch with yourself and your team at Powell Edison just to talk through sort of the wills, the probate, the trust aspect, just to talk through their personal circumstances, what's the best way to get in touch?
Well, thank you for that. I mean, it's my pleasure. If people want to sit down and speak with us, we offer a free consultation period. It doesn't cost any money. It's free of charge, where people sit down with us. We then talk through their objectives. One thing I would say is we're no longer on at 14 Albert Street.
Yeah,
we've moved. We're now at Raglan House.
Yes,
thank you. We're now at Raglan House on Raglan Street. And we are having our official office opening on the 29th of March at 5 o'clock. So we invite all our clients to come and see us, those that... that can, to maybe sit with us and have a drink of a glass of wine or maybe some champagne or some orange juice and to meet the team and the rest of the new team that's come on board. The telephone number is as it always was, so it's Harrogate 01423 564 551. And the website address or the email address is info@powell-edison.co.uk, and you can visit our website at www.powell-edison.co.uk.
Andrew, can't thank you enough. Fantastic information there, and thanks for coming on.
Thank you for inviting me.
The Property Hospital, Stray FM.
The Property Hospital is all about me answering your property concerns and demystifying the process. This week, I'm answering a question from Lisa, who's got this to say.
Hi, Alex. I'm putting my house on the market soon and I want to make it look as attractive as possible to buyers. I've read that doing things like having a fresh pot of coffee on the go, baking bread in the oven and the table all set for dinner all help, but aren't they a bit clichéd?
Lisa, thank you. And yes, you're absolutely right. Those ideas, let's face it, they are a bit dated nowadays. And today it's more about clean lines and less clutter, the better. So clear away anything from the room that shouldn't be there, making sure all the surfaces are tidy and dust-free. Dirty homes and unpleasant smells will deter your buyers. So clear any used pots from the kitchen and ensure any pet areas are thoroughly cleaned. Empty all your bins, of course. Have freshly laundered towels in a sparkling bathroom. I do actually know some clients who've even bought brand new fluffy towels, which they just keep solely for house viewings. Also, think about your furniture. What are you going to be taking with you? If you're not taking it, get rid of it and create more space in your home. And then think about lighting. Warm ambient lighting will set the room off to its best, so ensure key areas are well lit with lamps, downlighters, or pendant lighting. The key is to put yourself in the position of the buyer. Think about what would put you off and what you would like to see when you look around someone else's home. I hope this is of some help and best of luck with the house sale.
The Property Hot Seat. Stray FM.
Name.
Ian Darnbrook.
Business.
A1 Insurance Services Limited.
Years experience.
25 years in the business.
It's a pleasure to welcome Ian Darnbrook into the studio today, just to really try and get to grips with, dare I say, the insurance industry. Now, Ian, just sort of to just talk us through, what exactly does an insurance broker do? You hear the term getting thrown around, but I don't know whether anyone really understands it.
Right. An insurance broker, we go out there to find the right policy to suit your needs. We deal with over 100 different insurers, so we go to each insurer to find the best policy for you.
And how do you actually get paid at the end of the day? Am I paying you up front as a search-type service?
How does it actually work? The premium we quote to you includes a commission that we get from the insurance company. So the price we quote you is what you pay.
Sounds an obvious question, but what sort of things do you actually insure at the end of the day?
We can insure most things: your house, your cars, collections of cars, businesses. Okay. Let properties.
Yeah. So it's the age-old question. Why don't I go onto one of those fancy websites, Money Meerkat, as they say, and go and get a quote? What are the pros and cons of sort of going down that route?
You can do that. They can be cheaper. You've got to watch out for policy conditions and assumptions that they make when you're doing the quotes. If you get it wrong, that's your problem. We check the policy cover to make sure you're getting the right cover. If you're doing it yourself, you could miss something. There could be higher excesses. We've had occasions where they've excluded flood cover.
Right.
And we've had people who've insured vehicles and they've had no theft cover because they've not got the right security on the vehicle.
And I guess in those situations, the insurer completely backs out and says,
yep,
not my problem. Over to you guys, and
that's
you
it.
Then personally have to settle it.
Yes.
And from an insurance quotation point of view, with your experience, what are the pitfalls a lot of people can inadvertently sort of fall into and then, I suppose, live to regret it?
Yeah. Probably the main one on household insurance is not insuring the property for the rebuild cost. A lot of people will go for the sale value, which is incorrect. It should be what it would cost to rebuild, or on your contents, what it would cost to replace your contents.
And just talk everyone through this rebuild value. What is it and how can you actually specifically define it? Because obviously you don't want to be paying more than rebuild, nor indeed obviously less.
Normally if you have a survey done by a mortgage company, they will give you a rebuild cost, or you can go to surveyors and they will give you a rebuild cost. There's a lot of policies out there that rated on bedroom rated, and they give you a certain sum insured. I mean, like for example, AXA Extra, they give you up to £1 million sum insured. So if you've got a three bedroom semi in Harrogate, obviously £1 million is more than enough to rebuild that house.
Are you not then inadvertently overpaying if they've got a policy that values you up to £1 million, but your property is, say, worth £500,000?
No, you're not overpaying because it's rated on the number of bedrooms. So if you could have the same policy for a five-bedroomed house, but because they've got five bedrooms, they would pay a higher premium.
I've got you. And then how does it work, I suppose, conversely, on the car insurance side of things? I suppose the age-old thing is, especially when your children are growing up, they get in the sort of the car and the driving licence and all of that, and people sort of, I don't know, it's old-school mentality, try to sort of slightly fudge the issue and get the kids in under the parents' sort of car insurance, but actually it's their son's car and he's driving it a lot. How do you actually work through that sort of knot, potentially?
You have to be very careful. Insurance companies call that what they fronting. So basically buying the son or daughter a car, insuring it in the parents' name, knowingly that, you know, the son or daughter is the main user. Most insurers that we deal with now, they can pick that up. They know there's a problem. Whilst young drivers are learning to drive, premiums are not too bad. It's when they've passed the test and they get to get the first car, you could be looking at premiums in excess of £3,000.
Gosh, and is there any way around that whereby if you put extra people on the policy, is there anything sensible that people can do?
Sometimes if you put the parents on, it reduces the cost a little bit. There's a lot of people out there doing telematics, which is the little black box in the car, which does make a difference. Unfortunately, at the moment, we have no insurers that can offer that. It's only available usually direct.
Got you. And what's the most unusual items that you've insured? You've been around the block quite a bit, with all due respect, and I dare say there's been some interesting items that have floated your way.
We did insure a tank, which was on a vintage policy, and we've also got a client that's got a collection of naval memorabilia, which includes a letter signed by Lord Nelson.
Wow. Well, and how do you actually value a property? You obviously go to a specialist.
Yeah, he got a specialist valuation from a company for that one. Yeah, I think it was in the region of £25,000.
Wow. So if anyone has got a tank on their driveway, or indeed a letter from Lord Nelson, or indeed just straightforward house and contents insurance, what's the best way to reach you guys?
Best way to give us a call on 01937 581 417, or you can email us, which is best email address is probably info@a1insurance.co.uk.
Fantastic, Ian. Great insight and some really useful information. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Alex Goldstein's top tip.
Don't ever underestimate the impact of curbside appeal if you want to sell your home. One of the first things potential buyers will see when looking for a new home is that photograph of the front of your house, often in a list of properties that they're scanning on a website or a property app. You need to make your house look as attractive as possible at first glance, and it could make the difference between them scrolling right past or stopping for a closer look. Also, many buyers do a drive-by of houses and they're interested in before they go and book a viewing, so it's really important the front of your house is presented at its best. So first thing, get rid of the cars, the bins and anything else out on the driveway when the photographer comes to shoot the images, so that the front of your house looks completely uncluttered. Clean all the windows and windowsills at the front and paint wooden doors with a fresh coat. Make sure the garden is weeded and tidied, hedges are pruned and weeds pulled up. If you've got a doorbell, make sure it works, and if not, either fix it or remove it. These are small things that, if done, can make the difference between people stopping or simply passing by. That's the Alex Goldstein Property Show, and yet again some superb top tips and features. If you need expert information, videos and up-to-the-minute property news, then head over to the website alexgoldstein.co.uk. Alternatively, if you require personalised thoughts or 15 years of experienced advice when it comes to buying or selling your property, please get in touch directly. The next episode is out on the 1st of May, so make sure you tune in for that. Until next time.